please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Last week, we started explanation of Surah Saf, which was revealed in Medina and declares God's love of all those believers who maintain the solid ranks or unity in selflessly and fearlessly defending Islam. It encourages the believers to stick together in support of God's cause and criticizes those who broke their word and those who argued against the faith. Moses and Jesus are among the prophets whose communities became fragmented. The rebellious were left to go astray, and the faithful granted success. We continue from where we left you a fortnight ago, and here is Ayah 5.
وَإِذْ قَالَ مُوسَى لِقَوْمِهِ يَا قَوْمِ لِمَ تُؤْذُونَنِي وَقَدْ تَعْلَمُونَ أَنِّي رَسُولُ اللَّهِ إِلَيْكُمْ فَلَمَّا زَاغُوا أَزَاغَ اللَّهُ قُلُوبَهُمْ وَاللَّهُ لَا يَهْدِي الْقَوْمَ الْفَاسِقِينَ
When Moses said to his people, O my people, why do you torment me? When you certainly know that I am Allah's messenger to you? So when they swerved from the right path, Allah left their hearts to swerve, and Allah does not guide the transgressing lot. This ayah is a reference to the troubles given by the Israelites to Prophet Moses, despite the favors of God Almighty to them. They annoyed him to such an extent that they ridiculed the miracles he performed as magic and accused him of forging lies despite the fact that they were certain of his mission as the prophet of God. The Israelites deviated from the straight path, and because of the extent of their evil deeds, the all-merciful Lord left them to drift away from the path of truth. Thus, there is no affliction worse than deprivation of divine justice and the hardening of the heart to drift away from the path of truth. This ayah teaches us the following points. Number one, familiarity with the accounts of the prophets makes us firm-footed on the path of God and inspires us to resist against hardships. Number two, the Israelites were ungrateful to the favors of God and disobeyed the prophets, including Prophet Moses, who delivered them from the tyranny of the Pharaoh. They thus deprived themselves of divine guidance. Now listen to Ayah 6 of the same surah.
وَإِذْ قَالَ عِيسَى ابْنُ مَرْيَمَ يَا بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ إِنِّي رَسُولُ اللَّهِ إِلَيْكُمْ مُصَدِّقًا لِمَا بَيْنَ يَدَيَّ مِنَ التَّوْرَاةِ وَمُبَشِّرًا بِرَسُولٍ يَأْتِي مِنْ بَعْدِ اسْمُهُ أَحْمَدُ فَلَمَّا جَاءَهُمْ بِالْبَيِّنَاتِ قَالُوا هَذَا سِحْرٌ مُبِينٌ
And when Jesus, son of Mary, said, O children of Israel, indeed I am the messenger of Allah to you, to confirm what is before me of the Torah, and to give the good news of a messenger who will come after me, whose name is Ahmad. But when he brought them manifest proofs, they said, This is the plain magic. This ayah points to the message of Prophet Jesus, who conferred to the Israelites the teachings of Prophet Moses and gave the good news to them of the coming of the last and greatest messenger of God, that is Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The name Ahmad mentioned in this ayah means praiseworthy. And despite the interpolation of the evangel, this prophecy of Prophet Jesus of the coming of the last prophet is preserved. This is evident by the word comforter used for Ahmad in the English translation of the Gospel of St. John, which says in verse 16 of chapter 14, He will give you another to be your comforter, who will be with you for the ever the spirit of truth. In verse 13 of chapter 16 of the same gospel, Jesus also says of the prophet to come after him, However, when he comes who is the spirit of truth, he will guide into all the truth. He will not speak on his own authority, but will tell only what he hears. And he will make known to you the things that are coming. Prophet Jesus performed miracles like raising the dead, curing the blind, molding birds out of clay, and infusing life into them by the command of the Almighty Creator. But the ever-rebellious Israelites rejected these miracles as magic. Along with the pagan Arabs, they also ridiculed the miracles performed by the Prophet of Islam as magic. From this ayah we learn that, number one, every prophet used to confirm the mission of the past prophets and give tidings of the prophets to come after. Number two, Prophet Jesus has explicitly announced the universal mission of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Number three, the prophecies of Jesus regarding Islam are all too evident in the Bible, despite the interpolation. And number four, the deniers of truth ridicule miracles as magic. Here we present you ayahs 7, 8, and 9 of Surah Saf in conclusion of this week's episode.
وَمَنْ أَظْلَمُ مِمَّنِ افْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ الْكَذِبَ وَهُوَ يُدْعَى إِلَى الْإِسْلَامِ وَاللَّهُ لَا يَهْدِي الْقَوْمَ الظَّالِمِينَ يريدون ليطفئوا نور الله بأفواههم والله متم نوره ولو كره الكافرون هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
And who is a greater wrongdoer than him who fabricates falsehoods against Allah while he is being summoned to Islam? And Allah does not guide the wrongdoing lots. They desire to put out the light of Allah with their mouths, but Allah will perfect his light, though the faithless should be averse. It is He who has sent His Prophet with the guidance and the religion of truth, that He may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheist should be averse. These ayahs are reference to those evil persons who, when invited to the path of truth, resort to blasphemy, even against the Almighty Creator, and as a result, are left by God to go astray. Allah sends His guidance freely, but withdraws His grace from those who willfully indulge in falsehood and debasing superstitions in opposition to the light of eternal unity and harmony, which is Islam. The divine light of guidance enlightens the seekers of truth in all times. It is a continuous process. It is inextinguishable, despite the gravity of the plots of the disbelievers to try to snuff it out. The Islamic doctrines are steadily gaining ground all over the world through promotion of the concept of justice, harmony, fraternity, human rights, and the real freedom for women, free from exploitation by men. Thus, to aversion of the disbelievers, the light of guidance of Islam, its progress towards ultimate triumph over all other religions, will illuminate the whole world with the advent in the end times of the Prophet's 12th and last infallible heir, Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, who will end corruption on earth and establish the global government of peace, prosperity, and justice. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, it is a cardinal sin to ascribe lies to Almighty Creator and His prophets. Number two, the genuine teachings of Islam are light since they enlighten hearts, minds, and souls. Number three, the enemies of humanity have always tried to put out the light of guidance through every means, but have miserably failed. Number four, Islam is the universal religion and will eventually prevail over all creeds and schools of thought. And number four, God Almighty, who sent prophets for the guidance of human beings, has promised the eventual triumph of Islam even if the disbelievers are averse. With the reappearance of Imam Mahdi and his global government of peace, prosperity and justice.
Say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witches.
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
The United States is a country too familiar with gun violence. Now a simple mass shooting doesn't even draw the attention of the public the way it used to. There has to be something special, like a horrific school shooting killing dozens of children or back-to-back shootings resulting in many casualties. Then you have lots of people, pundits, politicians speaking about it, trying to figure out the root cause. Some pin the blame on the guns themselves, and some say it's the people using the guns. Then the discussion phases out with almost no action until the next mass shooting occurs. And that's the vicious cycle going on for many years.
A nation under fire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Today, we're going to speak about an absurd increase in gun violence in America. The country has seen more than 600 mass shootings for three straight years. And every time there is a high-profile mass shooting or milestones like that, Americans are left asking themselves what could be done to stop this. Yet, at the same time, they know that it is almost guaranteed the next year will be the same, if not worse. So what is behind the repeated mass shootings in the U.S., really? And to discuss this, we are pleased to have our two guests on our show, Dr. Wilmer Leone, columnist and political scientist, joining us from Washington, D.C., and Netfa Freeman, organizer at the Pan-African Community Action, also joining us from the U.S. Capitol. Stay tuned.
The new data on gun violence are out, and the picture does not look good. According to the nonprofit Gun Violence Archive, there have been 609 incidents of mass shootings in the United States this year, in which four or more people, other than the attacker, were shot. This puts the U.S. on pace to reach around 675 by the end of the year. Last year, the country saw a staggering 690 mass shootings across the nation.
I watched as this community got shot up. A high school that was a mile from my own shooting. Like, seriously?
New research also shows that over 1 million people in the U.S. have been killed, both intentionally and accidentally, by a firearm in the past 30 years. That is roughly the number of people who have died from COVID-19 in the last couple of years.
Now, shocking numbers indeed. But to many, the element of shock has worn itself out because this has happened again and again. Americans have become overwhelmed by the scale of so much death and are convinced there is little they can do to change it. It's like the more they hear about shootings in public spaces, the less of an impression the news can make. Do you agree?
Well, I mean, people in the U.S. are propagandized a lot, and they also, a lot of this sensationalized a lot. And some of the propaganda, and even just really what I would, and this is just an opinion and a, on what you call it, a theory, I guess, because I can only give a theory, is that the, there are a lot of Hollywood movies that talk about apocalyptic and dystopian futures and things like that. There's not anything really that impresses upon the people the need for cooperation and collectivism and doing things that would mitigate any type of emergencies, things like that, emergency preparedness. People are actually fed an individualism, something that tells them, hey, you got to prepare for all of the crazy people who will be coming and trying to get the little bit that you have.
Now, obviously, the pandemic and the surge to buy more guns during the early days of COVID-19 have played a key role in the surge of gun-related deaths in the last 3 years. But the question is, why should Americans rush to buy guns when a pandemic breaks out? And how much of a factor was the pandemic in the rise of gun violence in the past years?
Well, I don't think that we can really attribute this to the pandemic. America has been a violent nation since the Mayflower landed in Massachusetts. Look at the way that the early settlers dealt with the indigenous population, what we now know to call Indians. Look at how the Americans dealt with, well, enslaved the Africans and dealt with the Africans. America has been a violent nation since the inception of America.
When we go through the literature of gun violence and gun culture, there is so much talk about this. So many solutions presented by experts and politicians, and yet year after year, we see almost no action. What seems to be the problem?
Because you have the, in terms of, well, the action to control gun violence is a very complicated thing when it comes to the United States. If we were to look at the legislature and the government of the United States that is dominated by the elites and this so-called, you know, struggle between the Republicans and the Democrats, but all of them are really beholden to big money interests. So they sometimes they're really posturing when they really are beholden to big money. And so what the people really want, when people want certain things, they can only pretend that they're going to do something with it. And then there's this deadlock in, you know, Congress or the House and those type of things. And then on the ground, compounded with that are the results what's produced, the conditions that are a result of capitalism and neoliberalism, poverty, frustration, despair, where people actually act out these things without any other recourse or ways of expressing themselves through violence. And then guns are the most ultimate form of violence in the United States. So because of this condition about that I just mentioned about the frustration of things as a result of the economic system, that's the part that the powers that be are unwilling to address at all. So it becomes only confined to, well, control guns and have less guns, when it's something that's much more complicated than that.
A lot of the times, the discussions of mass shootings and the necessity to control gun violence end up in arguments on the Second Amendment, which guarantees a right of the people to keep and bear arms. However, the meaning of this clause cannot be understood apart from the purpose, the setting, and the objectives of the draftsman.
Because up until around the middle of the 1960s, the Supreme Court did not back the misinterpretation of the Second Amendment, saying that the Second Amendment, that there's a constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms. That's not what the Second Amendment, that's not what the Second Amendment says. If you understand English punctuation and grammar, that's not what the Second Amendment says. If you also understand dependent and independent clauses, a right to keep and bear arms has to do strictly with the need for a well-regulated militia to provide for the security of the free state. That's what the right in the Second Amendment is for. Now that we have a National Guard, We don't need a Second Amendment.
And now guns. They've always been a tool of power for Americans when the white settlers used them to subdue the Native Americans and keep the African Americans as slaves. America won the Second World War through gun power. Now, the United States has been constantly at war since then. That's why many refer to the problem of gun violence as gun culture. So can you really separate guns from American culture?
Mm-hmm. So there is what we would, I guess you call a gun culture in the United States, and it stems out of, because of the United States as a settler colony, it's an extension of Western Europe and colonialism. In terms of its conquests around the world, did it by force. And there was discoveries like gunpowder, the use of gunpowder, and how they used it instead for what other people were using for. They used it instead for the types of, for purposes of domination.
There is rather a more insidious cause to the menace of mass shootings, and that is America's glorification of gun violence. American cultural products, movies, TV shows, and video games unapologetically glorify violence. According to one study, around 90% of American children have had some exposure to violent video games, and more than half prefer violent video games to non-violent ones.
The culture evolves around and is centered around violence, and we are a violent country. When you look at our television programs, violent television programs. When you listen to the music, violent music. So that has become, again, the one of the foundations or fundamental elements of American culture.
The conventional wisdom is that Republicans are pro-guns and Democrats are coming after your guns. So do you agree with this polarization? And if so, why do you think it's so?
Mm-hmm. I don't agree with the polarization. It's an oversimplification of what's happening in the United States, because when they say that, they're talking about the elite or the political class, those who control these parties, which is not the masses of the people, and those type of things that is a result of the economic conditions. And so the Democrats are posing as trying to be responsive to the people. They don't have answers for this. They all carry guns. Everybody carry. I mean, people carry guns, especially the elites who are trying to protect themselves. It doesn't matter whether they're Democrat or Republican. Let me refine that. Not that they themselves may be carrying guns, but their bodyguards carry guns. Put it that way, because they don't, you know, protect themselves. They have the police. They arm the police. I mean, you can't be against guns and then constantly funding the police. It's the Democrats, the bipartisan, lead this. And then around the world, their whole answers and solutions to everything is force of arms. And so, you know, you can't claim to be anti-gun, but you're pro-bombing and you're pro-high-power weapons, you're pro-weapons of mass, you know, all these kind of things. It's hypocrisy.
Polls show that the overwhelming majority of Americans support some restrictions on firearms, but Republicans' opposition to any new gun regulations is becoming stronger by the day, even in the face of gross mass shootings. So why has support for gun rights become a hallmark of the Republican Party?
Working at the behest of the gun lobby, Republicans always talk about, well, that's just the beginning. That puts us on the slippery slope that Democrats want to ban people's access to firearms. I've never heard a Democrat say that.
There is almost 400 million civilian-owned firearms in the United States. That is more than the population of the country. Americans make up 4% of the world's population, but own about 46% of the entire global stock of civilian firearms. Some surveys have shown that many people believe the country is moving toward another civil war. So is the situation like a tinderbox waiting to explode?
I mean, a civil war in the United States, I guess it's possible. I think it would be a misreading of the whole, the everything, if we just, thought of that. I would say, well, one, the statistic about how many guns there are to people.
The more guns that are around, the more people are going to use them. The more polarized the country is becoming, the greater the chances of a civil war breakout. There is also a greater chance of another major armed uprising like the one that happened on January 6th last year.
That too many people in this country don't really understand peaceful conflict resolution. Again, because we see so much violence on television, we hear so much violence in our music, that picking up the gun and that what in many people has just become a knee-jerk reaction to where they think this is solving their problem because they're operating out of emotion instead of thinking through, how do I resolve this conflict for a win-win situation?
Now, a survey conducted by the Pew Research Center shows that white people have many more guns than black people do. First of all, why is this? And do you believe that gun control laws restrict black people more than they do whites?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this also has, you know, historical roots in some of the first law. The gun control laws were around making sure that indigenous people, Native Americans or American Indians, couldn't own a gun. Same thing with enslaved people. So it was about protecting the white settler colonial project, and that's carried on through the day. And even in fact, but there's contradictions there. So the gun laws and the amassing of guns in that industry was really it leaned toward disproportionate terms favorable to white people. And even now, with us being more oppressed, like people of African descent, indigenous people, in terms of the laws can work against us in the sense that they put the gun control laws will have, you know, people that have records and all that. The mass incarceration in the United States we're represented disproportionately in the mass incarceration.
Now, maybe the question is not why black people have fewer guns. Some people believe that there is a morbid fear hardwired into white people that makes them buy guns in a frenzy fashion.
European Americans have this, what seems to be almost an innate fear that of retribution, that what they as a culture have done to people of color will eventually find its way back to their doorstep. And so they feel that in order to repel that enemy that will eventually make its way back to their doorstep based upon the way the inhumane and treatment that they have and the oppression that they have imposed upon others, those others are eventually coming and gunning for them.
There have been a lot of recommendations to curb gun violence. Those include reduce easy access to dangerous weapons, reduce firearms access to youth and individuals who are at risk of harming themselves or others, and hold the gun industry accountable, etc. But the question is, can gun legislations and prevention be truly effective in dealing with increasing levels of gun-related violence in America?
Gun legislation, what would the legislation be? It can't, because it to say that is to say that the only root, the only cause for violence is the existence of guns. But it doesn't say what is behind the act itself, what motivations, what emotional disturbances, what political dispositions and situation circumstances in prevailing in the country that are behind that, that are the root cause of it. Yes, access to guns could be one thing, but then we live in a settler, we're colonized. Some of us are colonized people, and that to act as if, you know, denial, because that was also that's what was happening before. Do you know, most people don't know this, during the 1960s and 1969, the National Rifle Association, the NRA, that's so infamous for protecting people's rights to guns, supported the Mulford Act in California. And they did that, which was a gun control legislation, probably the first gun control, but they supported that. A lot of people don't know it. And that Mulford Act was directly in response to the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. And the powers that be, because of this, our right by law, civil, quote-unquote, civil right by law in this country, changed that law so we wouldn't have the right to organize ourselves against oppression. And we need, you know, so it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really, what the legislation is can be used to oppress people.
Yes, overall mass murders will go down with stricter gun control laws, and better mental health checks will probably reduce the number of massacres. But America's real mass murder problem is when those deaths are politicized and solutions are ignored along partisan lines. So can politicians really get it together and solve this? Well, in the short term, at least, it seems things are going to get much worse before they get better. And now, like every week, it's time to see what Abbas Montarim has prepared for us.
Peace, and welcome back to Power to the People. Today on the episode, we're just going to take a look at some of the reasons why mass shootings in America keep on happening. So let's get into it. First, we got to understand that violence is as American as apple pie. It's the very foundation of this settler colony. So when violence happens between America's citizens, it makes sense, as it's the very moral framework. It's the very moral framework in which this country was founded on. If we think about it, how can a nation that is perpetually at a state of war amongst the colonizers versus the colonized, and is also in a state of perpetual imperialist wars, not to be expected to have violence within a settler colony? This is why mass shootings happen, because realistically, it's part of the ethics of this so-called American settler colony. And if we look at the history of guns in America, it was all so that these Europeans can steal the land from indigenous people and enslave Africans. All this was about the creation of the so-called American Empire. Europeans with guns, they used them to steal Africans from Africa and enslave us. And then they were used in order to protect these newly founded European colonies in America and to protect the institution of slavery. And in the so-called United States Constitution, the Second Amendment, it legalized the right for the masses of European settlers to own guns in order to protect their property, which were enslaved Africans and stolen land. The Second Amendment of the Constitution, it says, quote, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This allowed every settler to be armed to protect this power structure, whether they own slaves or not. And this is why there's millions upon millions of guns in the street today. This is the history. This is the historical development. And while the biggest mass shootings are usually referred to and reported by the media as happening in the span of the past few decades, the biggest mass shootings were happening to indigenous and African people at the hands of the colonizer. For example, on December 29, 1890, U.S. troops killed over 300 Lakota people in the massacre at Wounded Knee. Yet when the media talks about mass shootings, or even popular discourse is about mass shootings, it never acknowledges, it rarely acknowledges, how the USA and its military massacred over 300 people. And there's many massacres that we probably don't even know about. And while mass shootings are the newest forms of these mass killings, it's important to understand that the white settler European, they have been committing massacres against Africans and indigenous people throughout the history of this country, and they have used whatever weapon is at their disposal. This has literally created an American culture that is obsessed with violence, as violence is used to maintain the white settler colonial rule. And to sum it up, American culture and its propaganda is violence. You turn on the TV and it's imperialist movies glorifying the United States, bombing other countries. The music that's being pumped out by these corporations is glorifying violence. You read the American history books and it's also the glorification of violence. So it can be said that the average American citizen is propagandized to be violent. And this is why political education is so important. Because if we don't have an understanding of how our minds are being warped to think like the colonizer, we will be in a perpetual state of slavery, both mentally and physically. This is Power to the People.
Well, that was our show, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Do join us again next time for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Role of Erdogan powers policies and recent bitter events in Iran is obvious. This is the part of speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on October 3, 2022, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's armed forces. This ceremony was held in Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam University of Officer and Police Training. The people who are creating corruption and damaging the streets are not all the same. Some of them are young people who take to the streets due to the influence of a program on the internet. Even so, all of them together are a very small fraction compared to the Iranian nation and compared to the faithful, devoted youth of Islamic Iran. However, some of them are not like this. The Ministry of Intelligence's recent statement clarified some of these matters to a large extent. But there is much more to this. The judiciary must determine their punishment in proportion to how much they have participated in the destruction and damaging the security of the streets.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today. And that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Another issue is that from the very beginning, some officials said things or made statements out of sympathy, but without doing any research. Without having done any research, some of them accuse the country's law enforcement. Some accuse the police, and some accuse the system as a whole. Each person did something in his or her own way. This is a separate issue. When they saw the truth, when they realized the effect of their statements, and when they saw the enemy's plan on the streets and in people's lives, they should have compensated for the things they had done. They should take a stand and openly state that they are against what has happened. They should make it clear that they are against the foreign enemy's schemes. The truth of the issue has been made clear. When you see US political elements comparing these events to the fall of the Berlin Wall, you should see what they are aiming at. You should realize that this is not about feeling sorry for the death of a young girl. You should have realized this. If you did not realize it, you need to realize it now. If you have realized this, then take a stand. This is another point.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
In the limelight.
According to analysts, the crisis of gas shortages in Europe and the possibility of citizens turning to electric heating devices will put Europe on the verge of widespread blackouts. They say next winter we will see larger regional blackouts in Europe. The risk of industrial closures, power outages, and blackouts due to gas shortages lurks among European citizens in the cold winter, which can also lead to regional tensions. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Berlin-based newspaper Welt am Sonntag writes, a German official sounded the alarm warning of serious electricity shortage in the country and across the region. Rolf Tissler, president of the German Federal Office for Civil Protection and Disaster Assistance, said, "We have to assume that there will be big blackouts in winter." Tissler said, "We have to expect blackouts in winter. By this I mean a regional and temporary interruption in the power supply," adding that the power cuts were due to both energy shortages and temporary shutdowns of the entire grid to protect the entire network. The official further added that he was referring to short-term power outages, so-called brownouts, rather than larger-scale blackouts. Tissler warned that the situation could potentially reach a critical point, urging Germans to scop on food, water, and other essential supplies. Tissler said, "The last couple of years have been really tough for Germans," adding that the COVID-19 pandemic served as a prime example of the unforeseen effects of a crisis. Tissler pointed out the coming years are yet to be more challenging in light of the worsening climate situation and other serious and geopolitical tensions. He said the saddest part of the news was the European Union at the confederal level denies the hardships that normal people were going to face in winter. In related news, a major German grid operator told media in early October that the country may be forced this year to cut its electricity exports to other countries in order to survive in winter. Hendrik Naumann, chief technical officer of German electricity grid operator Amprion, told the Financial Times about potentially cutting off electricity exports to other countries to avoid local shortages. Naumann said in an interview that temporarily pausing exports of electricity for hours rather than days could be a last resort to salvage the country's embattled energy crisis, which has been in the eyes of the storm since gas supplies from Russia were cut. France and Austria are the biggest importers of Germany's surplus electric power, whose energy crisis could deteriorate with any switch off of German exports. Neumann said the Ukraine crisis was one of the numerous overlapping issues contributing to Europe's energy crisis, worsened by the shutdown of over half of France's 56 nuclear power plants and low water levels on main rivers delaying coal shipping. Germany's government decided in September to postpone the decommissioning of 2 out of 3 nuclear power plants in the country, saying it will keep the 2 plants running until at least April. Germany shut down 3 nuclear reactors in 2021, and shutting the remaining 3 would officially mark the end of the nuclear phase-out for domestic energy production. In the meantime, the Russia Today Daily reports national grid operator RTE warned on Friday, November 18th, France faces a greater risk of running short on electricity in January because the availability of the country's nuclear plants will probably be lower than previously forecast. RTE, which has been issuing updates of the situation on a monthly basis, also noted that decrease in the demand for power is making a shortage next month less likely than previously expected. RT claimed the situation appears less risky in December and from the end of February, but the month of January now concentrates more risks than in the previous analysis. Grid operator Électricité de France earlier warned that repairs and maintenance on almost half of the nation's nuclear plants may turn France, which has traditionally been a power exporter, into an importer this year. France generates roughly 70% of its electricity from 56 nuclear reactors. However, it had just 31 of them online on Friday morning, November 18th. EDF has plans to restart 15 units by the end of the year, with another 10 in the first 2 months of 2023. Some other reactors will have also be stopped for scheduled maintenance. The French government has called on businesses and households to conserve energy to avoid blackouts. In the event of a possible electricity shortage, RTE will launch an eco-watch red alert 3 days in advance, demanding reduced consumption. RTE says the risk of resorting to eco-watch system appears high in January. The grid operator warns it will largely depend on climate conditions such as a potential cold snap or even a moderate one. Furthermore, France Press News Agency writes, the price of electricity in Germany, France and Italy for 2023 has soared to new records due to the European energy crisis caused by the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. In Germany, the price of electricity for the year ahead reached €850 per megawatt hours in the stock market. The year ahead contract in France's bourse market passed €1,000 on Friday, November 18th, compared to last year's price, €85 in both countries. The year-ahead contracts in both countries' markets indicate a stark rise in energy prices. Soaring energy prices coupled with runaway inflation have put the livelihood of Europeans under heavy constraints after the Europeans severed their energy ties with Russia, the main supplier of natural gas to Europe, over the Ukraine conflict triggering a dire economic crisis on the continent. The shutdown of several nuclear reactors in France due to corrosion issues has contributed to the electricity price increase as power production has dramatically decreased in the country. Also, Italy's oldest consumer association, ONC, reported on Thursday, November 17th, electricity prices in the country set an all-time record in October. Prices for electricity, which is being sold in the Apennine on the free market, have surged 329% since October last year and topped the ONC rating of the most expensive goods and services. International flights followed power tariffs with an annual increase in cost equaling 113%. Gas was the next in the ranking, with prices surging more than 96% compared to last year. Since the start of Russia's special operation in Ukraine in late February, Germany has offered substantial military support to Ukraine, sending the country billions of dollars in military aid and heavy weaponry. Russia has in turn cut off gas supplies to Europe, causing a worsening energy crisis. Germany, along with other European Union countries, is scrambling to support homes and industries burdened by a further surge in energy prices.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The Taliban officials on Tuesday ordered a nationwide ban on university education for Afghan women. Earlier, a letter made public by the spokesman for the Ministry of Higher Education, Ziaullah Hashimi, outlining that the measure would take effect immediately in private and public universities. Today, the Taliban forces barred women from entering Kabul University.
This piece of news was really disappointing. Last night, when I was told that the Taliban have ordered girls to be excluded from universities, I couldn't eat or sleep. After so many efforts and attending several classes in hope of making a bright future, they at once ruined everything. This order is very painful and unacceptable. It has to be reversed.
This was very shocking. Nowadays, we've been sitting our final test. Today, despite knowing that they won't let us in, I rushed to the university. This is very difficult for an Afghan girl to comprehend the weight of being barred from getting education. So far, I've been worrying for my sisters who are banned from schools, and from now on, I should be concerned about my future too.
Afghan experts warn that the new order will have a devastating impact on the future of women as well as the entire Afghan nation. They urge the Taliban authorities to stop rolling back Afghan women's rights.
It is a catastrophic decision to ban women from universities. This can also be seen as a terrifying shock for Afghan society, especially the youth and women. It is so bitter and concerning. Previously, the explosion hit our girl students in tuition centers, but this devastating order is targeting the progress of a whole nation. The effects and consequences of this illogical order are unfortunate and irreparable in different arenas.
And it's difficult to imagine how a country can...
In addition to oppositions from inside Afghanistan, the United Nations and several countries have condemned the order. They have signaled that the Taliban administration won't get recognition until they equally observe the human rights of all Afghans. After taking power, the Taliban promised a softer role and upholding women's rights. But today, many here say that the Taliban have been failing to abide by their promises. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Capital dwellers here in Tehran's Tajrish Bazaar, jam-packed